But I would like to congratulate the organisers of this meeting on calling it together. I was in this very hall when the Media Workers Against the Gulf War began, and the media is such a powerful instrument in our society that it would be absurd to suppose you could have any successful campaign of any character unless you did bring media workers directly in. And I say this as an old BBC producer and a member of the National Union of Journalists over 45 odd years. I want to talk about the ideas of fascism. Everybody who's come tonight will have some special reason for being involved. If they're Jewish, they may themselves have suffered or have been the sons or daughters of people who escaped from Germany. If you are a black or Asian, you will know that in the areas where you live there is a direct threat to your life. If you are somebody of my age, you will remember, as I do very clearly, seeing Mosley on the streets of London in 1935 in uniform before they passed the Act of Parliament making political uniforms illegal, and have attended, as I did, meetings in the East End of London with my dad, who was a Labour MP, which was broken up by fascists. My whole childhood was overshadowed by the obvious inevitability of war, and hearing Hitler's broadcast from Nuremberg on the radio cast a shadow, and like everyone of my generation, I lost family, my brother and others who died in that war. And I think it's very, very important we should understand what fascism is. Fascism was the response of capitalism to the arrival in Moscow in 1917 of socialism. However distorted it later became under Joe Stalin, it was seen as a threat in every form, communist, socialist, social democratic, everything that challenged the capitalist system was supported by the repression of it, was supported by Western leaders. And in my opinion, from 1917 until the Berlin Wall came down, and still today, it is the prime objective of any of the governments representing capitalist societies or believing in capitalist ideas to destroy all forms of socialism and a readiness to use fascism for that purpose. And unless we understand that, we won't understand the strength of what we are up against. I agree so strongly with Paul about the way the media handle it. They have handled it now in a sort of superficial way, make jokes about Alessandra Mussolini as if she was a pop star, make jokes about things that are happening as if they were inconsequential. Fascism is a very powerful philosophy, strongly supported by the well-to-do and rich, and intended to turn working class people against socialist ideas. That is what it is about. As a child, I came from a very political family. I bought Mein Kampf when it was published. I think I was about 12. And I cut out one or two extracts from it, which I have long remembered. This is Hitler in Mein Kampf. In the course of a few decades, under the expert hand of social democracy, the trade union movement grew from being the means for protecting the social rights of man into an instrument for laying national economics in ruins. I've heard that speech in a very similar form from a very high source now in the House of Lords, and I'm not being sexist when I say by the beginning of the century, wrote Hitler, the trade union movement had long ceased to serve its earlier purpose. With each succeeding year, it fell more and more under the influence of social democratic politics and ended by being used merely as the battering ram for the class war. Was that not the argument we heard against Arthur Scargill throughout the miners' strike? Finally, said Hitler, I learned the connection between the doctrine of destruction and the character of a race which until then was almost unknown to me. Understanding of the Jews is the only key to comprehension of the inner and therefore real aims of social democracy. And then he goes on to say, democracy in the West today is the forerunner of Marxism and would be inconceivable without democracy. It is the feeding ground of that world pestilence which is enabled to develop there. In its outward form of expression, the parliamentary system, it appeared as a monstrosity of filth and fire. Now you couldn't have it set out more clearly than that. This idea that fascism is only about racist attacks. It is an attack upon the rights of people, the rights of people to organize in trade unions, the rights of trade unions to organize politically with a view to looking after the interests of working people generally. And it's important to say this because otherwise the ethnic communities who are under attack may feel it's just them, and we might be tempted to think it's just them, it's just the Jews, it's all of us who are under attack. Now Mussolini, and I've got his autobiography, which I got hold of about the same age, says something very similar. But what's interesting about Mussolini's biography is that there was a foreword to it by Richard Washburn Childs, the American ambassador in Rome. And he said, the Duce is now the greatest figure of the sphere and time. So don't think fascism is just something that happens on the streets. Fascism is an idea that serves the interests of those who want to prevent any political change from taking place. And I think it's time we did a bit of a re-examination, you know, of the 1930s and got away with the idea that the British government was appeasement, believed in appeasement. They didn't believe in appeasement. They supported Hitler. They backed Hitler. And if you look at the captured German Foreign Office documents, you will find that when Halifax went to see Hitler on behalf of the British government, the first thing he did was to congratulate the German Chancellor on having destroyed communism in Germany and acted as a bulwark against it in Europe. And the whole of that 1930s period was a period when Western governments were happy to use fascism in order to destroy socialism in all its forms, not just in Russia, but in the West as well. And that was true right up. I mean, Harry Truman, after the German attack on Russia, Harry Truman was quoted in the New York Times as saying, and he became, after all, the founder of the NATO and the North Atlantic Treaty, he said, if the Germans seem to be winning, we should help the Russians. If the Russians seem to be winning, we should help the Germans, in the hope that as many as possible of each of them kill each other. Now that was the architect of NATO. That was a man who later on, when the war was over, resumed the pre-war policy, because the Cold War stemmed out of the pre-war policy of Western governments to destroy socialism. And I think this has to be understood, because as capitalism now goes back into crisis, and it is in crisis, all the conditions are reproducing. When capitalism produces unemployment, and it's not an accident after all, it's a deliberate policy, unemployment, isn't it? Unemployment undermines trade unions, lowers wages, boosts profits, makes people fearful of their employer, threatens them with repossession of their homes if they lose their job and can't keep up their mortgage. As despair and cynicism and pessimism spreads, it's open to somebody to come along and say, I'll clean the whole rotten system up. And no doubt in Italy, that was one of the factors that led to the victory of that media proprietor who had espoused again those views. But it isn't just the failure of capitalism that leads to fascism. It is the failure of the left to present an alternative to capitalism that creates fascism. And the responsibility of the British Labour and Trade Union and Socialist Movement must be stated clearly, not that there are any of them at the top who have sympathy with fascists. But if you fail to offer an explanation of what is happening, and you simply become an alternative government in waiting to administer the status quo, you deny people the representation they are entitled to expect, that you could, through trade unionism and democracy and socialist analysis, you could create a better society. There was a very good letter, I expect Paul saw it in the Independent, I think yesterday, from somebody who made much the same point, attacking the leading article of the Independent, saying liberalism can deal with the skinheads. There is in the back of my mind an awful fear that fascism and fascist ideas may seem at the moment to be quite an amusing and attractive way of dividing the working class from itself at a time when otherwise it has some prospect of replacing the worst government we've seen in living memory. The sort of idea that this is almost entertaining, that the labour movement in East London should be split between fascists and right-wing Labour councillors. And we have to challenge that, because despair and fear are the fuel of fascism. And when you take socialism off the political agenda, and I think this has to be said quite plainly, then of course you leave it empty for xenophobia, racism, fascism, all sorts of religious fundamentalism that could be very, very dangerous for the future of mankind. Now, we're discussing shortly how we should celebrate D-Day. All I'd say about it, one thing you might do is to see that all the old people who fought there still get medical treatment despite their age. The other thing that we have to point out is that there were two wars going on at the same time, and I say it as a serviceman. The officers were having another bash at the Germans, the Hun. But for the rest of us, we were fighting fascism. And there was all the difference in the world between the two. I remember when I was on a troop ship as the Labour candidate in a debate during the war, before I could do it, I was only an aircraftsman second class at the time, which as you probably know is the most junior rank in the Air Force. I was summoned to the commanding officer troops. And I went into his cabin and he said, "Ben, this is a meeting on war aims." So I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "There's nothing political in it, is there?" I said, "Oh, no, 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 not at all, not." And we had a smashing socialist meeting on board the troop ship. And I do think that the British media, come back to the point that brought this meeting about, the media having played a notable part in trying to destroy, marginalise and remove socialists of all kinds from the political agenda, now finding that they can't cope with the consequences of what happens, are now playing and toying in an almost frivolous way with the idea that at least the working class is divided again, and in a way hoping, some of them I suspect, to exclude totally the possibility that socialism might come back. I do not believe it. I believe that socialism has got a greater contribution to make in defeating fascism than anything else. Indeed, I must say this to you, it's so long since socialism was argued for that most people have forgotten the case against it. If you say, why don't we use unemployed people to build homes, unemployed building workers to build homes, people can't remember the reason why you don't do it. Well, what was it? There must have been a reason. Surely companies say, can anyone remember? And my own opinion is this, that if we put forward a clear analysis, cut out all the personalities of politics, all the hours spent on the media discussing whether John Major will go. I couldn't care less whether John Major is going. What I want to know is what is happening, why is it happening, and what can we do about it? And I loathe the way some of the political people, you know, fall in with this media game very much. The soundbite, I think, virtually exhausts the intellectual capacity of some parliamentarians. If they were asked to speak for 40 seconds, they might not know quite what to say. But this attack all the time on Tory ministers, Blunkett the other day called for the resignation of a Tory minister I'd never heard of. Well, I looked him up in my book, and as soon as I saw his name, I thought it would probably be better if he left, but where did he actually get to? You've got to address serious questions. And the responsibility of journalists now, particularly, because of the access they have to the public through the newspapers and broadcasting organisations in which they work, the responsibility of journalists is a heavy one. And knowing Paul and John and Victoria and others, I know perfectly well that this initiative is coming at exactly the right moment. And I don't think we should have any doubt whatever that if we put the case against fascism with commitment and knowledge and passion and force, we shall find most people recognise that it is a deadly threat to all of us and must be defeated if we're ever going to build a better future for ourselves and our children than our grandfathers and fathers left for us. Comrades, thank you very much indeed.